Hello and welcome to Blockchain Gaming World episode 160. I'm your host John Jordan. Don't forget to check out my daily email about blockchain gaming. You can find that at gamestx.substack.com. In today's episode, I'm talking to Dan Nicolades, who is the CTO at Studio 369. They've been working on Metalcore for the past couple of years. It's one of the new wave of blockchain games, I would say, which are very much focused on games. It's a Unreal 5 engined game. It is a shooter game. You can play as a grunt. You can play driving a tank. You can play flying around. You can play in a massive mech as well. So Studio 369, very experienced with the Unreal Engine, worked on a whole bunch of games, including some Mech Warrior games. So that's sort of where the inspiration comes from. But as we talk in the podcast, it's very much focused on being a sort of a Web 2 game with sort of Web 3, if you're into that sort of stuff. So I think a new wave of these sort of games now, which are putting blockchain towards the background, it's very sort of important for their sort of long-term success, I think, but in very much in terms of let's get just players in who love playing these sort of games. Let's give them a very high-end experience, something that they're used to. Let's not let them worry about wallets and all this sort of stuff. So with Metalcore, you can go in and play as a Web 2 player. You can get blueprints. You can build up a garage of vehicles. You can level them up, and then if you want to, you can mint them into NFTs. Obviously, if you have NFTs, you can do all the NFT stuff as well from the get-go. But this is very much a game that is all about making a great game and then sort of proving to people that blockchain is interesting and relevant, and gives them some more sort of interesting sort of decisions they can make in terms of sort of gameplay and metagame, all that sort of stuff. So I hope you enjoy the show. Please do subscribe to the podcast. Every week we are pumping out new episodes and some really good ones coming in the rest of March. So don't miss out. Thanks for watching, and see you again soon. Hello and welcome to the show. Very pleased that I have Dan Nicolades, who is the CTO, Chief Technical Officer at Studio 369. How's it going, Dan?
Hi, nice to meet you, and thanks for having me on.
Cool. So we are going to be talking all things Metalcore today. But before we dive into the specifics of that, good to find out about our guest today. So Dan, if you can give us a bit of a part of history about where you've been in the game space and how you ended up in blockchain.
Yeah, sure. So I've been in kind of traditional game development for quite a while, almost 20 years now. Mm-hmm. Got my start at Midway Games in Chicago in the mid-early 2000s, working on Mortal Kombat. We were working heavily in Unreal Engine 3 at the time. So I got my start in the Unreal Engine, graduated to UE4 and now UE5 as well. So have spent almost 20 years working in the Unreal ecosystem, making games for various large and small companies, worked on Gears of War 3, worked on also some smaller indie games. So kind of have experience doing a little bit of everything in the industry. And about 4 years ago, I founded the studio with my other two co-founders, Vic Lopez and Matt Candler. We right at the start of the pandemic. So we came together to work on just games that we really love making. One of which was a title called World of Mechs, which we released for the Oculus Quest 2. It was kind of a small-scale mech combat VR game. And we kind of had the idea, hey, why not take this and like up-res it, move it to PC, blow it out, make it a much larger combined arms mech game. And then right around the same time, we had some former funding partners from Matt's side that came on and were like, hey, are you guys interested in Web3? And we thought, hey, why not give it a shot? We'd also been doing some work for hire and had worked a little bit with some other Web3 companies like Parallel and Ultra.io so on. So we'd kind of been a little bit dipping our toes into the space, but that was the kind of first moment that we got an opportunity to really dive headfirst into the making our own big Web3 game. And that's what Metalcore is.
Mm-hmm. So there was no none of the sort of worry or the sort of weirdness that's come with, seems like many sort of traditional game developers who've just found blockchain a very difficult sort of concept to get their heads around. You weren't really into crypto, it sounds like, but you kind of thought it's new tech, let's see what it does, sort of thing.
Yeah. I mean, to a degree, right? I was aware of crypto and was like tangentially interested in it, but it wasn't like the thing that I was like, I have to work on this, now until it started to kind of gain prevalence more in like 2019, 2020 time period, right? A little bit past that, actually, more like 2021. And with conventions like NFT NYC and so on and so forth, started to kind of become more interested in the idea of it and really started to understand like, how we would integrate Web3 concepts into our game, and it started to make a lot of sense, especially with NFTs as just player ownership of digital assets makes just so much sense in its application to games that I thought let's try it. I do think it has been a little bit difficult to wrap our heads around the business side of it. Especially over the last 3 years, it's been changing so frequently with respect to regulations and just kind of like what people have tried early, early efforts in the market have tried and what we've seen works and doesn't work. And, the vastly shifting landscape of Web3, but it has been overall like a pretty interesting project.
Mm-hmm. And continue down this route. I mean, have you found it interesting? Because one of the things we talk about a lot in Web3 is sort of community-led and traditionally sort of game developers have sort of kept everything quite quiet until they get close to launch. And obviously that's not really how we do it in Web3, and it's not really how you've done it either. I mean, you've been sort of quite open. So has that been a bit of tension's the wrong word, but how have you found that? Because obviously you like to build stuff and sort of have control, and maybe with Web3 you sort of have you have to show.
It's very different.
Show behind the curtain.
Yes, it's very different. It's it pushes a lot of the early decision making and puts a lot more pressure on you to get it right early on, which is different from what we're used to. Not necessarily a bad thing. It's good to put a little bit more thought early. We're used to having a little bit more flexibility. We do tend to kind of try to hold on to that a little bit. So while we do make certain promises that we don't want to go back on, there are other things that we've said. We're not going to be public about this, or we're not going to make this a concrete promise that we have to stick to, because we need the freedom to be able to creatively explore, what's fun and what isn't. Such a big portion of game development is iterating and finding the fun. And to a degree, it's a bit like a search algorithm, and you can't necessarily know that you've hit it in a big monolithic 40-page document in the first month of the project, right? So and the other side of it that was very different from what we're used to is how much we front-loaded art. So in most games that I've ever worked on, you start with mostly gray box and very, very small art team, and you start mostly working on the tech infrastructure and the gameplay and et cetera in a not very beautiful world. Maybe you do one little beautiful corner, as you'd call it, and then you figure out what's fun, and then you blow out the art. What we did was instead got all the art done almost in the first 6 months of the project and have since been trying to catch up with getting all of it into the game. So that's been also quite different.
So you mentioned a little bit sort of in passing, but we'll go into a bit more detail now, sort of the concept of Metal Core. Obviously you mentioned you worked on this sort of mech game, and if you the people in the team have worked on lots of different games, but there's Mech Warrior is like a big sort of brand that people have worked on as well, so clearly that's something you have some affinity for. You think those sort of games are interesting. It's sort of open world, but as well as mech, you can run around as a sort of grunt, I suppose, but you have flying vehicles as well. I mean, it's quite the whole sort of panoply of different vehicles. And obviously that sounds really cool, because we just imagine, we can immediately feel what that's going to be. But obviously that has some gameplay issues. If I'm running around as a little infantry guy and there's a big mech going to stomp on me, that's... So just from that very basic point of view, how does that all fit together?
So basically the way it works is... We've tried to kind of split the gameplay into, there's big open areas where vehicle combat happens, and then there's bases where the vehicles can't get into them. So at every point, even if you own zero vehicles and you're just like close quarters combat with a shotgun in quarter based shooter, you're going to be able to find a way to play Metalcore and have fun doing that, hiding in a base and waiting for a player to get out of his mech and go inside and shoot him in the back, right? Like, that is a valid way to play. So in the end, there's different modes of play, a little bit of something for everyone. And also, the way we consider this is we don't want it to feel like it's pay to win. One of our driving ideas is, players who are just jumping in, it is a free-to-play Web Web2/Web3 game, right? So it's, we call it kind of Web2.5. So it does have some mechanics where like some players might come in and purchase a bunch of really, really great vehicles. But what that's going to allow them to do is play with those vehicles more often, as opposed to making one vehicle that's just going to kill everybody else on the server. Like, you know, your vehicle, when it blows up, it's going to have a repair cooldown, a repair cost and time before you can use it again. So really building up your garage means you can play the vehicle side much more often if you want to, and have a lot more situational variance for what you want to do. But if you're a free-to-play player and you just have your one trusty mech, you're still good, and you're really, really, really good, you're still going to be able to go out there and wreck all the people who spent a ton of money on their really expensive mechs, right? So that's one of the driving ways that we've made sure that, you know, we don't feel like it's inherently unbalanced.
Mm-hmm. And I think for skill based games, that's one of the fun things that we're going to have in these sort of games, where, you know, there's going to be plenty of people with loads of money, but they're probably going to be older and not have the time to be skillful at the game, and they're going to, you know, so there's going to be this sort of interesting tension between, you know, maybe there's some aspects of, if you're buying loads of stuff, you know, you get something for that in the game, but in a skill based environment, you know, you're still going to be creamed by a bunch of 15-year-olds, probably, who just have much better motor skills than you.
maybe, or you squat up with some of those 15-year-olds and then they watch your back, right? Because some of these are like, you know, you buy like a massive, like giant flying fortress, and you know, you're the pilot and it's your aircraft, but there's like 12 gunner seats on it, and so you need people, you know, bombarding the terrain below you. So I will say that it does feel really good as being like a little grunt who's just kind of like stalking behind a big mech and waiting till the pilot jumps out and then going and assassinating him. Like, that just feels great, right? So on the flip side, like, 9 out of 10 times, that guy's going to find you and stomp you and kill you, right? So there's kind of a trade-off there, right, in terms of, like, you know, those moments for the players who really want to kind of make a challenge for themselves by taking on something that's maybe a bit more than they can chew, but the payoff emotionally should be there too, so.
And I guess we've been talking in the very sort of second by second sort of gameplay, but as with a lot of these games, you have sort of different sort of layers on it. So do you want to talk a little bit about how those play out, because with lots of games now we have this sort of, you know, second by second gameplay, but then we have these sort of layers of meta and all this sort of stuff, which is you know, obviously is tends to be more important for blockchain type games than
so the main kind of game loop that we have, we call it open game mode, which is player versus player versus environment, big open world server where you have three different factions in a big giant zone, and you can accomplish daily missions and kind of randomly generated missions. We spent a lot of time implementing this really cool system that we called kind of tongue-in-cheek DGEN, which stands for dynamic generator. So it actually dynamically generates mission content for players to do. And so that's what you're going to be spending most of your time doing. But in addition to that, we have PvP objectives, session-based PvP battles, barony versus barony battles. Baronies are our in-game version of a guild. And so we have like a bunch of different ways to engage in that kind of broader metagame loop. And then zooming out a step further, we have the territory war, which is like, you know, a big Planet Side 2 style, albeit quite a bit slower, you know, struggle for kind of occupying different territory. And then every season of the territory war, one team is going to win a zone and the other team's going to lose. And then, you know, you'll push out your territory, your safe farming zone a little bit more, and the other, you know, change the main conflict area to another adjacent territory. So all of that would be kind of like the meta loop, as well as just the general progression of advancing your garage, getting all of the best, you know, vehicles for every situation in combat, like equipping all of their top loadouts, like best in slot for every loadout slot for each kind of thing. It's just going to take a really long time. And then barony progression. So like, you know, a lot of players, their goal will be to be the number one ranked guild in the world, right? And so that's one of the things that we want to enable too, with kind of more competitive play.
Okay, cool. And when you talk about sort of the sort of individual players building out their garage, obviously there's the sort of NFT side of things, but also you have a quite sort of some ideas about sort of about crafting and how you get blueprints and all that sort of stuff, which seems an interesting sort of approach. Because obviously, you say some people want to come in and buy stuff off the marketplace, but you obviously want the people, particularly if you've got a Web2 loop, people sort of grinding their way up into that.
Yeah, and that's really a driving ideal of ours, is that you should be able to play this game as a Web2 player without ever connecting a wallet, and have like experience 95% of the content that you would be able to experience, and then just kind of naturally see how connecting with Web3 would just be a benefit, a pure benefit over what you're doing. And then kind of that way, that's how we want to level up Web2 players into Web3 players. Mm-hmm. You know, working with Immutable, they have great passport tech. So we want to make minimize the barrier of entry for players to get kind of into the Web3 side of things. But Web2 players will be able to play the game. They'll be able to mm-hmm. to defeat giant mechs and scan their blueprints and then like get all the pieces they need to build them and then upgrade them, modify them, upgrade their loadout slots, make it into something that's like really high level, high rank. And then at a certain point, if they want to, like I said, leveling up into Web3, they can take that Web2 vehicle, convert it into an NFT by expending some of our token, and then now you have an NFT that you can sell, right? So that might be what some people do. You know, they might play for months with this thing, maxing out all of its stats, convert it to an NFT, sell it, and then now, you know, you can start again on a new vehicle now that you've made a little bit of money. So
yeah, mm-hmm. I think those are interesting mechanics. So one of in the previous podcast, I was talking to someone who basically they had some Web2 gamers and they sort of gave them sort of tokens and NFTs, but they sort of said, but they, because they didn't really understand Web3, they sort of knew these were special items, but they didn't really understand they had value. Whereas if the amount of time you spent to create, you know, these assets, then you put a lot of your own sort of psychology into them, and you know they have value to you because you spent all the, you know, you say many months potentially building these things out.
Yeah.
And then that sort of then makes sort of sense that you go, you know, maybe you do it into the UI, you press a button, spend this, and it becomes this NFT. Maybe you don't know what an NFT is, but you know there's an item that I've spent a lot of time doing in game, and now it's going to be sort of somehow solidified, and then probably obviously you'll see there's a marketplace. To me that seems a much more holistic way of getting people to realize these game assets, you know, that they can have value. And to understand the value within the sort of context of the game, rather than just being monkey JPEG for
thousands. And one of the key one of the things that we really wanted to get across was that premium, even a whale who comes in and just buys a bunch of legendary NFTs, if they're all level one, they're not going to necessarily be even as powerful as a rare and uncommon NFT that's been leveled up to 100 and has all best in slot loadout options set to them. So somebody who's just spent hundreds of hours leveling up that NFT is still going to be potentially better off than somebody coming in with a level one legendary. And we wanted to realize that time value in the asset and allow the players to take that and not make it so that all value in the asset is just inherent to when it was originally generated, but instead allow that kind of time value that people put into the game to be reflected in the value of the NFT they end up selling.
So you, at the moment, you have correct me if I'm wrong, I think you have a 10,000 set of NFT sort of game characters. So that I think it came out in 2022. That was when a lot of those sort of games started doing that. So they've been around for a while. You will have the other vehicles coming out at some point. Did you feel like you had to get NFTs out in 2022? Because some people put out sort of game passings, but as far as I understand, the ones you put out are sort of more like, they seem to be more like game characters. They're sort of, you know, so can you talk a bit about the thinking around that?
Yeah, so that was our Infantry Genesis mint. So we did that. It was a free mint, and the goal around it was just to raise awareness of what we were doing, but also to try to get a core community of really beta testers to get into our game. The main thing that those infantry have been doing over the past year and a half has been giving them people access to our early alphas and now our closed beta. So, and you know, we have a solid 500 to 1,000 players who are kind of joining in and playing. On a kind of a weekly, bi-weekly basis whenever we release new builds. So, and that I think that's worked out pretty well for us. So,
And you actually, I think just probably by the time this podcast comes out, you will have finished your current sort of, I think it's a 2-week session you've had. So is that sort of basic testing for how the game works? Are you looking at sort of other specific sort of metrics? Any feedback that you're sort of leaping out at you from that testing?
Yeah, so I mentioned before our open game mode with this DGEN, dynamic generated mission system. We just got that completed in like January of this year and have been starting. We're really at the stage now where we're in exponential growth mode of just now we can feed the system a lot more content and get so much more out of it. With procedural systems, typically what you want to do is create a small set of initial starting content that it can be used to kind of validate that the system works, build out the system, and then once you've proven that that system works, start just feeding it tons more content. So that's the phase we're in now. And we really wanted to run this playtest so that we could validate that that kind of loop, that mission, that kind of daily mission farming loop was fun for players. And that has, from the data in our playtest, that has seemed to be true, that players seem to really enjoy it. They're spending hours a day playing, and that's great. So we're getting a lot of good data out of it, like what types of missions players like, what types of vehicles they're in, just all the stuff that we need to know in order to properly balance and tune the game.
Good. And in terms of schedule for the year, I mean, obviously probably some things you don't know yet and some things you might not want to tell us, but how's that sort of shaping out? What are you sort of looking to, what are the sort of the peak points?
Yeah, so we are planning a token release. So okay. we're doing a TGE in late spring, early summer. Okay. And we are likely going to release a kind of a wider beta. We're going back and forth on whether we want to call it open beta or yeah. if it's still kind of closed beta 3. It may still be gated by NFT ownership, but we may also just distribute a lot more NFTs. We're still kind of going back and forth on exactly how wide we want to do it, because we really want to have 1 million players playing this game on a monthly basis, but we don't necessarily want to be there in May. That's maybe a little too fast for us. So we'd like to work our way up to 1 million players. So we'll see how we can do that. So that's kind of our spring summer. In terms of features, the main thing we're working on right now is the loadout system. So we're just adding a ton of content and implementing the base mechanics and the UI and all this stuff. But in the summer and the fall and later this year, some of the bigger features that we want to work on, we want to add a full campaign, a more of a narrative campaign for the mission, so that you can I mentioned that dynamic mission system. All of that works on the server, and we want to add a narrative campaign that utilizes that on the server, so you're getting narrative while still the threat of other players coming and killing you while you're doing these missions is still always there, or somebody trying and then one of your teammates coming and saving you, right? Like that emergent PvP gameplay is always super fun. Mm-hmm. So we want to bake that into a full narrative mission system. But we also want the territory war feature. That's a big feature that we want to get done later this year, as well as a full barony progression thing. We want our baronies to feel like they're players who are maybe more of the kind of organizational leadership taxonomy as opposed to the hardcore, pro gamer, that they feel like they have something to do and that they kind of get some value out of that too. So those are some of the big things we're working on this year.
Okay. So that's quite a lot. They say quite big features to be doing that.
Yeah.
Cool. And sort of generally, how do you feel the sort of temperature of blockchain sort of gaming as a sector is going? Because I guess sort of started out when you guys were sort of thinking about it was sort of very early, and we had sort of that the X Infinity sort of days where it's sort of in some ways very exciting, in some ways sort of difficult, because a lot of people in the industry were very sort of anti blockchain, and then I guess for the last kind of year or so that's all gone away and everyone's just ignored it. Now it's sort of coming back into frame. So I mean, do you just try not to worry too much about those sort of sentiments, or
you have to worry about it.
You do.
I mean, you have to worry about it. I mean, certainly it affects our release planning. It affects when we want to try and do raises for our token, for investment rounds, etc. All of those things, all of the changes in the market towards the end of last year have really helped us get to the point now where we're going to be announcing, we're closing a new investment round here. And that, wouldn't have been possible in the fall. Right. Mm-hmm. So that plays a huge role in how much runway we have, how many of these promises we can fulfill, we can now confidently make and know we have the runway to fulfill for the community. But then also there's some traditional needs for game publishing that we have to, market, right? We have to market it, especially to Web 2 players, right? Our goal is to, the main benefit that we see now from Web 3 is the early adopter community, and how it's so important in games. And even when it was only Web 2 games, it was always very crucial to have a key set of ambassadors and kind of evangelists of your product that will go out there and spread the word and just kind of say, everybody needs to be playing this. Right. And genuinely not just shilling, but because they genuinely love the product. Right.
Yeah.
So that I think like there's so much enthusiasm in the Web3 world that allows us to attract players' attention. And when they come in and they see what we've done and, you know, how, like, I don't think I'm exaggerating when I say we're the best playable game in Web3 right now.
Yeah.
Their enthusiasm just goes through the roof and they turn into those ambassadors that we want, which is awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, coming back to timing, and it's nothing you were in control over, but it is interesting. The market's coming back now and now we're starting to see some of these games that have been, you know, obviously been worked on for the last kind of 2 or 3 years. But as you say, there's not an awful lot out there that's very playable. I guess there's you guys and Shrapnel are sort of the obvious sort of high-class sort of shooters from teams that know what they're doing. And there's, you know, loads of other sort of interesting, more indie projects. But there still is this sort of situation where there's actually not that much sort of product out there. So you're, you know, it's in a sense a great stage for you guys the next sort of 6 months to sort of build that community.
Yeah, totally, yeah.
And come to the end, because we're going to have just a shorter podcast today because you've got other things to do. But we haven't really mentioned your PC game. As far as I know, you're not going to be a mobile game, I don't think. I think you seem very, very PC. But and how do you find, because at the moment you're through, you're distributing through Epic Game Store, which is obviously a bit more friendly for Web3. Yeah, as I say, there's not that many, not these sort of high quality sort of games out there, not many at the moment. And do you think that you can onboard Web2 people? Because the PC people have tended to be those sort of hardcore gamers who are a bit like, you know, not NFTs for me. Obviously, Steam doesn't let you do NFT stuff at the moment. How do you think about that sort of, because that's your sort of core audience, isn't it? Those sort of PC guys.
Yeah. So we are definitely starting with reaching out, especially during our closed beta periods, to Web3 gamers primarily.
Yeah.
But we have to reach out to Web2 gamers eventually too. And there is some mistrust there, but I do think that, you know, a lot of it is really just about the products, right? A lot of it is about, like, there's just nothing out there on Web3 that really attracts those gamers, that they actually just want to play for the sake of playing the game. And I do think that we, like, you know, the trick here is we need to make sure that we have a big enough Web3 community that's playing on a daily basis, that, you know, any Web2 gamer who jumps in and plays will find it a comparable or even hopefully even better experience to any other Web2, like, free-to-play shooter that they're playing, and will just inherently want to play our game, right? And I think that's the best marketing you can have, is when you have people genuinely wanting to play the game, going out and telling their friends, hey, I want to play this, and I am playing this, and it's super fun. And you know, once you're in that position, then you can focus on getting eyeballs on it, you know, doing some marketing spend, getting some more Web2 gamers to become aware of the game. And it won't be like this thing that's for Web3 gamers only, because there will be a mix of Web2 organic gamers coming in, you know, like on their own or through word of mouth, and a big community of Web3 gamers already playing it. And that's kind of the ramp that we see for ourselves late this year.
Mm-hmm. And do you think I mean, some people we've seen doing like a Web2 version through Steam, just to get people playing it and not worry too much about the friction. Do you think that's a good strategy, you think? Or
yeah, I mean, it could be. It's a little janky, because if once you, like I said, one of our goals is to upgrade Web2 players to Web3 players, and it's harder to do that if that's what they're doing. Like, you have to either put all of your Web3 connectivity outside the app, which is not ideal from a UX perspective, or you have to then say, hey, I know you're playing this on Steam, but why don't you download it on EGS instead, which within the game, which is kind of also weird.
Yeah.
So we may end up doing that, but, you know, there's some problems to solve there.
Yeah, cool. Good. Well, on that note, we will leave it. Maybe a future podcast later in the year when some of these situations are solved or more open. Cool. Thanks very much, Dan, for your time.
Thank you, John.
And thanks to you for watching, listening to the podcast, however you are consuming it. Every week we are talking to the people who are building out this brand new way of playing games. Hope you are finding them interesting. Please do subscribe, and we'll see you again next time.